following is a presentation of Real Racing USA. It's time to go drag racing! 200 plus miles per hour! And as always on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock on Real Racing USA, it is time for Straight Lining with Stevie Letemp. And Stevie's got quite a show lined up tonight, as always. And you ready to fire them all up, Stevie?
Absolutely, guys. We're going to start off tonight. So we're going all Harley drag racing right off the bat. As I've got James Thurber on the phone, this gentleman all the way out in California, one of the West Coast guys who made the trip into Florida and showed the boys on the East Coast how to get the job done and did quite a job of showing us. So, James, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, Stevie. How about yourself?
Oh, doing fine, doing fine. Yeah. You know, you worked on your bike all winter long. Pieces came in at the very end, so it was kind of touch and go. But everything just came together for you. Tell us about the race down there at Gainesville.
Well, it was, we did a little better than we expected, just right out of the trailer unloading. We unloaded and had the pole for the first two rounds, and by almost a tenth. We were hoping that we had, we tried something over the winter, and we saw like a 300 increase here at Sacramento before we loaded up and headed out that way.
Curiosity, Sacramento, as far as corrected air, how does that compare to going all the way down to Florida? I know both are on the coast, but what kind of air do you have out there in Sacramento to work with?
Not the same air at all. I think we what we did is we did the same exact track at the same exact time a week before Gainesville last year. So we used that, you know, went back to our records, and we used that as our baseline. And made a similar hit. You know, like I said, it was pretty close to the same conditions and almost the same day of the month. It was off by one day because of the year change. But, yeah, we saw almost a 400th increase and not a whole lot of time, of course, to do anything drastic after that. But that change that we made did show a good increase. And fortunately, it worked out for us when we got to Florida.
We don't. What you're probably, I have to say, one of your main competitors, it's Greg Krennic, talked about putting a spoiler on, and he seems to have picked up a lot of mile per hour, and he's given credit to the spoiler, now, or I should say to the fairing up front. Now, do you think it's the fairing, or you think he's found some more power and he's not telling you, or not letting it out of the bag, or he wasn't enough to handle you, but you do have to admit he did set a mile per hour record, so he has found something that's different. What are your views on that?
I'm trying to look back at some photos and see if the pro stock bike. I know that the pro modified bike, they added the fairing, and on the pro stock bike, I'm not sure if they added or just changed the fairing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking that I know the fairing is new for the pro mod bike this year, and like I said, the mile per hour, he runs a pretty similar top end combination that we do with a lot lower RPM than most of the class. We think it might be just a gearing issue. We're going to try something drastic when we get to Phoenix to see if it proves to be what it was. Because that would give you, you know, some pretty good mile per hour if you could get the motor to pull good on the low end.
So you think there may be some gearing changes needed to accelerate that top end?
Yeah, there might be something like that. It just seems like the motor's happy lower RPM under a load, you know, almost like a fuel bike. It kind of looks crazy on the computer what it really wants, but, you know, spinning it over $9,000, it doesn't want that. We found that out. So,
well, yeah. We've been on East Coast, West Coast, and you've been running your test there. We're going out to Arizona. Now, the air has got to be totally different when you roll out there because there's altitude involved and dry. I mean, how is that going to make your pro stock bike turn on?
Well, we actually stopped on our way home from Gainesville. We actually stopped at Tucson and did a division race. Kind of learned a little bit there. I think the altitude may have been a little higher than what Speed World may be, but we've never run there, so I don't really know. But the bike did want something different for sure than what it was running at Gainesville. So we're hopefully got a little head start. But
well, coming into Speed World, this is going to be the first time for us to come out there. Any expectations as far as the track? Are you familiar with it at all, or what do you really know about the track?
You know, we've never actually even been there. I hear it's really close to Phoenix or close to Firebird, and I've heard there's new owners and been a lot of improvements on it. But I talked to a few of the car guys there at the NHRA, the division race in Tucson. You know, a lot of them hadn't been there in a while either, so I wasn't able to get any real good info on it.
So this is going to be kind of a surprise for everybody. It's kind of like you roll in, it is what it is, and you just have to dial the bikes around it, huh?
Yeah, I think we'll all be. I think we'll all have a fresh, clean seat, you know, slate to start with when we get there. You know, everybody is finding the tune-up, you know, and it's getting closer and tighter. John Reno blasted up right up on us and ran a lower number than anybody in the field. So he was low ET for the event.
It's kind of unique about that because last year you were kind of the dark horse that came in third place in all anticipations. You have done what you set out to do. You won the first race. But not only do you still have the same menaces as before, but new ones are coming up on you. Now, this young man you just mentioned, how was he as far as a competitor last year?
I think they were having some chassis issues, and they started getting it ironed out towards the end of the season. And it's like him and Greg were the ones that that me and my crew chief were looking out for, because John puts a lot into it. You know, and I almost want to say he's one of the hardest in our class working himself on his bike than anybody else. He'll scatter a set of heads and have it up and running by next round. And it's like, so hats off to him and their crew. They're doing a great job. And to come up with that 16.5 right out of the, you know, it didn't come back for him, but it showed up once, you know. And it's like, that shows you that it's there. Yeah.
Well, curiosity, kind of slide away from the race a little bit and talk about the fuel cost for you guys. All the way from the West Coast, how did you handle the fuel deal?
Not very well. I didn't handle it very well. We got a newer truck, and it we had to stop every 150 miles if we could find diesel. And it wasn't too bad on the way over, but on the way home, it had gone up 30 or 40 cents a gallon. That was ridiculous.
Wow. And every 150 miles, you're stopping to load this rig up with fuel.
Yeah.
Folks.
Yeah. So we changed that. We got us a bigger truck on the way home. So now we've got some fuel range and looking forward to hitting the road this whole season and hit them all if we can.
Well, you're off to a great start. Currently sitting on top of the points. And of course, that's just where you want to be. And we're coming into a first-time track, coming into Arizona, although Phoenix, relatively close to Speed World, I would say, but still, it's going to be a new track surface. These guys are going to be attacking, yourself included. And it should really be, I think, really interesting. I think the S&S Pro Stock class, probably one of the most competitive of the classes between Pro Stock and the Pro Modified. You guys really shake them up and go after it. What kind of money does it take to build one of these Pro Stockers?
Oh, dude. Boy, without divulging to the world how much I've wasted, including my wife, I think you could build one for, I think the cheapest you could build one would be
$70,000 on the line. Yeah.
Yeah. We talked to Sandy Cosman about just getting a new roller. Our bike's pretty old. It's a 99, you know, and it's a 99 chassis with a brand new motor, of course. But he wants almost 35 for a really nice top of the line complete roller. So it's like, you know, when you start doing the math, there's no shortcut.
Well, you know, you've got the numbers right now. How much do you think a chassis like that, is it worth the investment? Is there enough ET to be gained on the 2008 chassis that's available?
You know, it's really hard to say. It would be an expensive gamble. You know, I'm sure that you know, we've found that there's a lot of we're losing a lot of ET just in my riding. So we've got the horsepower. You know, Rick has delivered us the horsepower and the reliability. But there's a lot in the riding. You know, we think that there's probably half a tenth just in how bad I'm actually riding the bike. You know, it doesn't look like it or feel like it, but when you go to the computer, it's like, boy, there's some room for improvement.
You know, when you say bad riding, now, explain to me what that is. You're not pulling your legs in fast enough, or they're too high, too low, or arms are wrong location, or just what is that bad riding?
Well, a lot of it is how you position yourself on the lawn. You know, if you're, I'm trying to keep myself down, but I'm seeing in the video that it's still wanting to pop me up, you know, and that weight transition, you know, can add up to a lot at just in 60 foot. You know, if you're hitting forward and throwing backwards at the same time, you know, your forward movement's not going to be as drastic. So we think a little bit in the riding position on the takeoff, you know, to keep all the weight going the right direction, or even throw it forward if we can. That's something that's in Bryce's school about. They call it the surge. That's a pro stock technique. And then, you know, hitting shift points on time. I seem to be late. I've worked on that and tricked myself by changing the light RPMs. And for some reason, I'm racing the bike and the track and my opponent. I'm not, there's some room for improvement there.
So, we already know now that you're going to be a better rider when we come into Phoenix, then. I'm quite sure you'll have that peg. And you think that's worth as much as a half a tenth?
Yeah, half a tenth. And that could make a big difference.
I'm sure Greg Krennic's really excited to hear that if he's listening tonight.
Well, you know, he still did beat us on ET. You know, we didn't see a 17. We didn't see any kind of mile per hour like that. We're hoping to try some stuff and stumble on it. We've been in a safe zone, you might say. You know, the bike has been pretty consistent. It's been making little baby steps, not trying to go backwards. But it's time to get courageous and do something crazy.
You know, sometimes I think you just gotta, you know, just jump in and swim, you know. So that sounds like you're ready to hit the boards right now. So I'm excited about it. I'm looking forward to going out to Phoenix, and naturally, I always enjoy watching you race. And I'd be curious, now that I've heard these different things, I'm going to be watching you real close. We're going to talk about it over the PA for sure.
Yeah, if you see me popping up like that, just pop me in the back of the helmet and tell me, stay down.
I'm afraid by the time I see it, it's too late.
Well, you can give me one for later, you know. When you see me in the pit, pop me and say, hey, you were supposed to stay down.
Is there any way you can modify your seat as far as, I know there's not much of a seat there, but your location where you sit your body on there, can you shim it up to where your body comes further forward, or is there anything like that can be done on the chassis?
There is something. I mean, the bike was built for a guy that was considerably shorter than me, especially in the torso area. So I'm kind of struggling that. I'm thinking it's mostly me, but the bike does seem to be a little short between the back of the seat and the bar position. So I'm not.
So if you pick up a half tenth, then I know you found the magic seat spot then, huh?
Yeah. If we can, if we can take a pole and stay on the pole, then we might. Then what we tried worked.
So are you pretty comfortable as far as your game plan going into the next race?
Yeah, I think so. We made a lot of passes there in Gainesville, you know, with all the rounds of qualifying and then going to the final. They gave us seven runs on a new, you know, on some new stuff we tried. And then again, I stopped in Tucson and got four more. So we changed some stuff over the winter, and now I'm learning to tune and deal with that stuff. Yeah, we're just hoping we can, you know, try something a little crazy and then be a little bit better at my riding, and we might pick up. We might pick up enough to hopefully stay on top.
Okay. Well, listen, James, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show tonight, and you've given me some things to keep an eye on you when you're out there. I'll be talking about you, as you know. And if this really picks up and things continue on, you know I'm going to want to have you back on the show, and I want to find out just what happened, and I'm sure a lot of our fans will as well.
Anytime,
Steve.
Thanks
for coming on the show tonight, too. I appreciate it.
You bet. I appreciate you having me on, and looking forward to seeing you in Phoenix.
Absolutely. Take care of that little puppy dog of yours, too, now.
Yeah, we will. It was his first race, too, and he did all right.
He's your good luck charm, Bo.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Well, James, thanks for coming on, and we'll talk with you later, guy.
Thank you, Steve, and thanks for everybody for listening.
Well, there you go, Jack. I tell you, I watched this young man race down in Florida, and he made the comment he wasn't going to be third this year, and boy, he sure wasn't. He really did a great job of driving, and it's interesting that he pretty well seems to have found himself being part of the problem as to where he's located, head position, and so on. As you heard, it's so critical on these bikes.
Yeah, you know, Stevie, too, sounds like some of these guys might just need to get together, ride in a convoy, and have a tanker truck hauling along beside of them. Good Lord.
50 miles and they have to stop for fuel from California. I mean, he's got to know every gas station for 3,000 miles. You know?
That's a way to make a lot of friends.
Oh, man. And you know, like you said, it wasn't too bad getting there, but it from the time they came into Gainesville on a Thursday, leaving, going back on Monday, gas had gone up 30 cents a gallon.
Crazy.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah. So now tonight we're also going to have, you got Terry Stewart lined up and Mike Bradley, and you got some news coming, right?
I want to, yeah, in fact, I want to mention a little something about Nitro a little later on tonight, too, that it's not good. Price of Nitro is going to be going way up, and we'll talk about that in just a little bit down the road here as well.
And Mike Bradley's an IHRA track owner?
Yeah, now Mike Bradley, it's a neat story with him. I think the racers, no matter what you ride or what you drive, you can really appreciate Mike Bradley. He has a program that has been approved by IHRA. It's called the Team Championship Racing. And he's gone to the local high school, and they're actually building a car, and they're going to teach kids how to drag race. And it's become part of their actual curriculum at the high school.
That's cool.
And he's going to talk to us about how it's going to work and how he plans to do it. And I think that's going to be fascinating. This is grassroots drag racing, and it's literally its finest.
Proactive promotion. We'll be right back.
Absolutely.
The following is a presentation of Real Racing USA.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Discount Airline Pilot Guy.
Mr. Discount Airline Pilot Guy.
Your minimal experience flying a plane will never land you at a reputable airline. Luckily, you don't work for one.
Look at me, I'm flying.
Sure, we're concerned for our lives. Just not as concerned as saving $9 on a round trip to Fort Myers.
Oh!
The most direct route to Houston? Through Fort Lauderdale, with layovers in Detroit, Vancouver, and Kalamazoo.
I can't feel my legs.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, skipper of the skies. You put the fly in fly-by-night operation.
Mr. Discount Airline Pilot Guy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
When purchasing a technical product like brakes, there is no substitute for quality and experience. In the performance industry, no one has more experience than the Brakeman. The Brakeman has been designing high-performance solutions for a variety of applications for almost 40 years. The current products from the Brakeman are among the most advanced on the market. The Tornado calipers are the only calipers in the performance industry to carry a U.S. patent number and their new line of pads and rotors. The Brakeman Super Brakes are solving brake problems on hard-use vehicles, from police cars to ambulances and a variety of fleet vehicles. So if you're towing a trailer, carrying heavy loads, or just plain want to extend the life and stopping power of your vehicle, it's time to call the Brakeman. On the web at thebrakeman.com.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to think Ozzy likes drag racing. Got to think so. Stevie, what do you think? You think Ozzy likes drag racing?
Ozzy Osbourne? Are you kidding me? My hero?
Oh, we got to get him out there, man.
Yeah, that's our. You didn't hear that, Terry. You didn't hear the lead in, lead out music. It's it's Ozzy. So there you go.
Cool.
Oh, listen, that's the only way to wake up in the morning. A little bit of Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah, but it's Metallica for me, or some good old bluegrass. I go from one extreme to the other.
Yeah, well, you know, when we get out to this racetrack, before I go any further, ladies and gentlemen, right now on the phone here, I have Terry Stewart. Excuse me, Terry, for not introducing you. Terry is a young man with Cresto Pro Drag, and this guy is hot. If you want to take somebody to Vegas and pay all their expenses and have them gamble your money, this is the guy I would have do it. He has won 3 races in a row in Cresto Pro Drag, and that's unheard of to win 3 in a row. And I don't see any sign of him slowing down. So, Terry, now that I put this pressure on you that you have to go out and win the fourth one for Stevie, how are you doing this evening, guy?
I'm doing great. I've had a great day, and I'm really happy to be on the show. You guys do a great job.
Well, thank you. Well, listen, right off the bat, you know where I'm going to. Last year, you showed form and just came around the last 2 races, and you were just dominant. You just ate them alive. 2 wins in a row to end the season, and wow, what a super finish. And you start this season off with a win as well and look strong. And now we're coming out to Arizona, starting to head west, and getting more out into your country. That's kind of a little closer to your backyard compared to Florida. What do we think we're going to do with this pro drag bike?
Oh, well, I'll tell you, man, the pressure is on, and all the hype about doing 4 in a row, I'm trying really hard to not even think about that. If I talk to my crew chief, Clarence Hightower, he'll slap me in the head if I start thinking I'm talking about a 4th win. You know, and what we got to do is go in there and make it through qualifying round 1 and then, you know, take round 2 as it comes and just go round by round. And that's pretty much how my team and I have gotten where we are, you know. And I'm not saying I've hit the big time because, boy, I'll tell you, I've gone 10 years before I got my first win.
Wow.
So there's a lot of time under our belt, a lot of mistakes, you know, a lot of learning of what not to do, you know, so that's very valuable for us. So we've become like a machine of consistency. I mean, right down to, you know, leaking the engine down after every pass, you know, and just like just going over the bike, bolt checking everything. I lost so many rounds over the years that I just can't leave one stone unturned, you know, and there's always one that you'll forget, but if I can go out there and just be consistent like we have been, then, you know, then I'll be happy. The half a tenth to 700ths of performance that we're looking for, if I found that while we were out there, then I would be confident. You know, I'm just really trying to lay low here on this whole thing and not let the psych and the pressure of 4 in a row get to me, you know.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, Terry, how are the numbers compared to the 2 wins last season, to your opening win down in Florida? Have you showed an increase in ET?
Yeah, we picked up a little bit of some performance there. I mean, we run I really left the bike alone for Pomona, for Vegas, and for Gainesville. I figured, geez, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Don't out-tune yourself here and just run the number. We know it'll run a number. You know, it'll run a 40 to a 50 somewhere. And in Vegas, we ran a 746, I think, in the quarterfinals. And that came out of nowhere. That was just the conditions coming around. The track came around. And, you know, like I said, we left the bike alone. We just serviced it and ran the same exact tune-up, you know, I mean, right to the T. And the bike is really proving to be consistent. And the bike is the real winner here, I'm telling you. Clarence Hightower, he's my crew chief. He runs L&S Screw Machine in Anaheim. And he's had the privilege to work with a lot of NHRA top fuel and funny car racers. You know, he makes a lot of stuff for those guys. And he has made me a good drag racer. And, you know, his goal is to make me better. And if I listen to him, then, you know, I think that everybody around me is going to be real happy. You know, but as far as going in there and just leaving the bike alone, that's my plan. I'm going to take baby steps, just like James said on the phone earlier. You know, find a little bit of performance by making, you know, small changes, because we get to a point with our bikes and our setup that I mean, you could call it a ragged edge tune-up, or almost like a razor's edge tune-up. Like, you can make a little change and see a big result, you know, which is better than making a big change and seeing a small result, or even worse, something that moves you backwards. But, you know, I just really want to be consistent. I'd like to pick up, you know, a half a tenth or something and find it. And we're going over the bike. We're trying to find little areas where we know that we have improvements to make.
Well, I think it's going to be really interesting when we go out to Arizona because of the altitude. Do you know what the corrected altitude normally is out there? I'm putting you on the spot from last year's
really
record.
I don't, but I know that being at Firebird, you know, we've seen below 2,000 and we've seen over 4,000 out there. So it's really going to play a role. But I mean, you know, nitro percentage will make up for most of that.
Yeah. I just keep throwing the nitro to it. That's like cans of oxygen going in there. Curiosity, how are you dealing with the cost of nitro? Has that become a factor on your team for expenses?
It's always been a factor. I mean, when I first started doing this back in 1998, I'd be driving around town. I'd buy a gallon at a time from Ron Fringer and Bill Chambers, and you know, and there was a couple other guys here in town that I'd you know, be scrounging around for nitro. And we got to step up to buying barrels a few years back, and you know, yeah, with all this talk about the Homeland Security and the dropping the barrels from 53 gallons down to 40 gallons and then raising the price to be more than it was, it's going to be tough on all of us, you know.
Yeah, I was going to talk about this a little later, but I'll bring it up right now as you're a nitro man. I have heard that nitro is going to go as high as $1,250 a barrel. And that's on a 42-gallon worth of nitro in the barrel. And that's probably, what, $300, $350 more than we're paying now?
Hurts, man. That takes the middle guy right out of it.
Yeah, and it's tough to stay competitive. Drag racing is really got its hands full just about everywhere you turn. If it's not gasoline in Canada, it's nitro in the States. And it's really, really important, I guess, that whenever you make a decision, it's got to be right on. You've got to go rounds if you want to keep racing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of these nitro bikes, you know, they'll burn just as much idling as they do going down the track. You know, so most of us that are out there warming our bikes up in between rounds, you know, we can burn through a half to 1 gallon. I mean, them big top fuel bikes injected, they're probably, you know, going through close to a gallon when they're just warming the bikes up in the pits.
Yeah. So about how much fuel do you consume on your bike? I realize it's not like the big bikes, but still, it's a 740, 750 consistent bike. And do you run pure nitro in that, or is it a mix with alcohol?
Yeah, we like to spit a little alcohol in there every now and then. And, you know, it can get dangerous if you run it right out of the barrel if you're not feeding enough volume to the engine. A lot of people don't realize that nitro burns at 23,000 feet per second. You know, where gasoline is more like around 25 to 30 feet per second.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to burn it, you got to dump it in there. Just keep it wet. But if you put a little alcohol in there, it usually softens things up and, you know, keeps things on the tame side of things. But
experiment with different fuel pumps, or are you allowed to by your class regulation?
In the pro dragster class, you know, a lot of guys like to call it B fuel or pro fuel on the East Coast. It really is the first and original top fuel Harley class. As time went on and the engines got bigger, they kept Pro Dragster alone, where we're limited to 122 cubic inches. We can only gravity feed the fuel to the bike.
Really?
That's it.
You're going 740s on a gravity feed?
Hey, Rick Moore's out there running 20s and 30s. He's got the record with a 713.
Oh, my gosh.
It's unbelievable. But to answer your question, Steve, I'll warm the bike up and make a pass, and I'll burn, my bike burns just probably about a gallon and three quarters. You know, my tank's just about empty when I bring it back. So
it costs you $100 a pass on fuel.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh. Well, I guess that's not really too bad, consider, you know, what your top fuel, you know, dragsters are going through, what, 17 to 20 gallons worth of fuel. So
unbelievable. Yeah, I heard about this, you know, 43 gallon per drum, this new regulation.
Yeah.
You know, that's enough for a guy like John Force or Cruz Pedregon to do two warm-ups and a pass.
Wow.
One barrel.
I mean, at $1,250 to warm it up, make one pass. Thank God the Harleys don't take quite that much fuel. But still, you guys go through a lot of fuel now. How long will a drum last you?
I'm using, well, the last three races since I've gone to the finals, I've used about 12 to 14 gallons at each event.
And so actually, Nitro Harley racing in your class, once again, it's gravity feed.
Yep.
Still, about 15 gallons will get you to the finals.
Yep. And you have to go with enough fuel for the finals, or you know what, you're cutting yourself short.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know we had some problems getting the fuel down there in Florida. That seemed to be a really confusing mess where they were supposed to supply it. The track was supposed to supply it, and then the supplier was gone on Saturday.
Yeah, they came in on Friday, and they had a short day. And I'd personally like to thank Jay Turner for floating me 5 gallons. Otherwise, I would have been slumming around the pits looking for more fuel to get to the finals.
Wow.
Thanks, Jay.
Well, I will tell you this. Outlaw Fuel is supposed to be back and in form again to where they are in charge of selling the fuel, which I personally am much more comfortable with that. And I think the racers are as well because Jim is always on his game. He's always got exactly what you need. He's right there for us.
Oh, yeah, we love Jim. I mean, you know, he cooked us that big turkey dinner last year at the finals, and that was great. He was cooking that food right across from my pit. I think we got more than our share.
What a great guy. He supplies nitro for your bikes and even makes dinner for you. Oh,
yeah,
God.
And if you win, he gives you a product coupon. You know, so I think I have some free nitro. I might even be able to make it through this Phoenix race after all.
Yeah, he's a pretty great guy. And Outlaw Fuels, what can you say? They have been with the Harley guys, I mean, through thick and thin. They're always ready to go wherever they need to go to supply it for us. They've been great people.
They are great, and good on you for mentioning them guys because they really they put their heart into helping us out, that's for sure.
Well, once again, I'm going to get back to the thing that you really don't want to talk about, but 4 in a row, is it going to happen? I know you're going in there to look at rounds, but will a 740 put you in the winner's circle in Phoenix?
You know, I hope that track will take a 740. And I'm happy with the 740 flat, and that is my personal best at this point. And if the bike wasn't so consistent, then I'd be a little more worried. If it was more erratic, I'd be quite worried. But you know, we got a few things up our sleeve. We're going to try them out there, and if I can pick up anything off my short times, then I think I just might be able to give Rick Moore and Mike Baumeier a run for their money, possibly. They always come off the trailer with a smoking hot ET.
Well, I know. Rick Moore is just incredible sometimes. Curiosity. We talked about the gravity feed. That fascinates me as a former crew chief. How about line size? Can you go larger size lines, anything to try and put more volume to this thing?
Oh, yeah. Volume is bliss, that's for sure. We put a lot of volume in it. The line size is very critical. And I personally think I have some improvements to make on my plumbing system, you know, where I could get the fuel making more of a straight shot to the carburetor.
Yep.
But some of the guys out there are running big, fat one-inch line, you know, two one-inch lines to their carburetor in some cases. And then, of course, you have these high-speed air jets that basically you've seen them. People call them the lean-outs or the solenoids. And that's a fuel line that comes right off the float bowl and routes up to the top and just dumps right into the Venturi through a jet. And the guys will be running a big, fat line on there, like probably 3/8 hose. You know.
Well, Terry, whenever we get out there in Phoenix, you got to have me over to your pit, and you need to run me through the pro drag system on that. I want to look how the fuel system works on that, and I want to understand that a little better.
I'd love to do it, Steve.
Now that's exciting. I enjoy that. I'm in total shock that you're actually running a gravity feed. I'm used to working on fuel cars where two-inch lines, 500 PSI fuel pumps, you know, and still having problems getting fuel.
Here's the real kicker that's going to shock you even more, Steve, is that we're limited to a high gear only. We have no clutch management. We can't use a cannon cylinder like the injected guys can.
Really?
Right, and they keep us to 11-inch tire. And now we have a minimum weight rule in the class, so we have to weigh a minimum of 5.4 pounds per cubic inch. So that's added some interest into the class here recently. And I have to throw kudos out there to Mike Baumeyer and Rick Moore for doing so well with all of the weight that they've had to bolt onto that bike. They've done a fantastic job, and I'm real proud to have them as customers of mine, too, as well as friends.
Well, it's simply fascinating on this Cresto Pro Drag. Now, I'm serious. When I get out in Phoenix, when I get through on Friday, you got to pull me over there, and we need to sit down, and you need to show me how this thing works.
Oh, I'd love to.
I know a little bit about it, but not enough to even be dangerous yet. So you need to get me to where I'm dangerous to talk about it. I would love to understand it just a little better and figure out just how that thing works. It's fascinating that you can gravity feed a bike to go 740. What kind of mile per hour are you running?
Me, I'm around 170, you know, high 160s to 175. I feel like I'm leaving a lot on the table there on my mile an hour. But there's a couple guys out there that, you know, they can bust off 180. Scotty Truett's got the mile an hour record at 191 miles an hour.
On a gravity feed bike. That blows my mind.
Yeah, it's a very interesting class, very challenging. You know, it takes a lot. You got to squeeze these engines real hard to get them to do that. But I'd love to show you. I'd love to bring you over to the pit and show you. My fuel system is a bit different than what you'll see on everybody else's bike because I'm manufacturing a lot of my own components, which are available just so they don't become outlawed. They're available for anybody to buy them.
I think that's really cool. Well, listen, Terry, again, thank you for coming on tonight. And you know, when we roll in there, the first thing you're going to hear when I turn on that PA system is, ladies and gentlemen, Terry Stewart rolls to the line. And, yes, he's going for number four. I'd sure like to see you get it. Terry, thanks for coming on the show this evening.
Thanks a lot, Steve. And if you could just give me 1 second, 10 years is a long time, and to get up here and to finally win a race or two or three, there's a few people that I'd like to thank.
Absolutely. Let's hear it.
I'd like to thank God, first off. Wouldn't be here without him. My family, my wife, my kids for enduring my absence through all this racing. My crew chief, Clarence Hightower, for everything. And my crew, my brother Ted, Timon, Jake, Jim Hubbard, Franco, Terry Cheney, you're in the hospital right now. We love you, brother. Stoney and Fat Dogs Performance. As far as sponsors, CP Pistons has really taken me under their wing and taught me a lot about pistons, where now I'm actually able to make a living off of selling their product. Lindell Racing Brakes, thank you very much for all of the opportunities with your product. L&S Screw Machine Products, could have never made it anywhere without them. I'd still even be leaving parts on the garage floor if it wasn't for them. And Swan Metal Composites for our wonderful composite brakes. And Tommy Sloan Racing for just taking me under his wing and making me a good friend of his family's. American Aqua for helping us out in the past. And West Coast Auto, Tony and Mike Ruggiero. Thank you, brothers. I love you. Thank you for convincing me to go to Gainesville. It wouldn't have happened without you guys. You know, and most of all, Cresto for sponsoring our class. And it's hard for us to get support for this show out there. And they've been with us for quite a few years now, and so really grateful for them. So, but other than that, I'd love to thank all my customers that are buying parts for me for their race bikes. You guys are what keeps me out there racing. And I'm glad and proud to be providing parts for all these people, a lot of them legends in my mind, you know, people that inspired me to do this, you know. And so that's a great thing. And just good luck to everybody, and God bless everybody out there that's racing these Harleys. So, and that's it, Steve. I know I've taken up a lot of time, but...
No. I will tell you this, Terry. When I come out to Arizona, you're going to be my teacher. I'm going to be your student. You're going to take me to school, and I'm going to learn all about how one of these Cresto Pro drag bikes work.
I'll be honored, Steve. That'll be a real fun deal there.
Okay. Again, thanks for coming on, Terry.
Thank you. Have a great night.
All right. Good night. Well, I'll tell you what, Jack. This is really a super ride on this young man's put together, and he's got a shot at four in a row. And he's running against the best. I mean, there are some killer guys out there.
Sounds like a super young man,
that
too.
Final run, consistency goes those rounds.
You know, Stevie, he sounds like a super young man, too.
I'm excited. In fact, it blew me away. I had no idea. And for all the serious racers out there, and you know how important fuel pressure is. And to find out, I had no idea. And that's my ignorance on this. I'm going to go to school whenever I get out there with him. these pro drag bikes are gravity feed. Holy smokes.
That's what they use. That was one of the things that we found out when we were up at the PRI show. The guy we had on last night, I was telling you about on Real Racing USA, Dennis Gibson from Hot Licks Racing with the drag boat. That's what they do. They use a gravity feed, 3.5-inch fuel line gravity feed to for their deal. Amazing.
It really is. And I mean, that has got to work a crew chief to death, because how much consistency can you get on fuel pressure when you don't have anything forcing it, you know, with a certain drive factor other than just gravity? In fact, remember, as the fuel load goes down, there's less pressure to
less,
the fuel.
Yeah.
So it's not like you have a pump that's putting at 500 PSI constant no matter what. So, that's amazing. So I'm looking forward to...
See, now here you go, Stevie. You've been in this game for a long time, almost a half a century.
Yeah, you don't have to remind me, but you're right.
And you just learned something new again. It's amazing, isn't it?
It just never changes. There's something new every single... It's constantly changing. I stand corrected. I learn and learn and learn every single day. I learn something new. And it just, there's no end to the evolving of drag racing and how it's changed and the things that guys do to make them go fast and how it works. It's fascinating.
And we're going to be coming back here in a few minutes with Mike Bradley, talk about this teen championship racing deal.
Absolutely. This is a really nice guy. I think you're going to really enjoy talking with him.
Be right back.
Hi, I'm Jim Dygert from Keels and Wheels Magazine. You're listening to Real Racing USA.
PowerMaster is your ASA series sponsor for the XS Power batteries. PowerMaster is pleased to announce the introduction of the XS Power series of batteries. XX Power batteries for racing applications and batteries for your car audio application. 12-volt batteries for street machines, street rods, off-road vehicles, and even motorcycles. XS Power batteries means 30% more power and no battery spilling. PowerMaster also carries your starters and alternators. Visit us on the web at www.powermastermotorsports.com.
At Port City Racing, it's about winning. From lug nuts to complete race cars and 12,000 parts in between. Whether you're new to racing or a seasoned veteran, you'll find what you need at Port City Racing. Since 1981, Port City Racing has been producing winners. Drag racing, circle track, and much more. You can now browse through our Port City Racing catalog on the web. View and shop online right from your race shop. PortCityRacing.com. That's PortCityRacing.com.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Professional Movie Extra Guy.
Mr. Professional Movie Extra Guy.
Never in the history of cinema have so many done so little for so many. Anybody can pay $8 to see a movie, but only a true artist can be paid $8 to be in a movie.
Shiny, shiny star.
Snotty lead actors need lines, direction, motivation, not you. You sit on your butt perfectly in scene after scene.
That's Hollywood.
A true pro, you're always focused. Even if you're seldom in focus. So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Nobody. Because you're not just anybody, you're a paid anybody.
I don't recognize
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi, welcome back to this edition of Straight Lining with Stevie here on Real Racing USA. And, Stevie's hooked up with Mike Bradley, and we'll turn it back over to Stevie.
Well, thanks, Guy. Again, Mike Bradley is on the phone right now, and Mike's from up here in South Carolina, and he's doing something that perhaps it may have been done other places, but this is the first time I've had a chance to be firsthand with it. And it's called Teen Championship Racing, where getting the teenagers involved in the local high school involved in coming out to the racetrack. Mike, good evening.
Good evening, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Tell us a little bit about this teen championship racing program that you're putting into your track.
See, this is a program that IHRA has had in place for a few years, and it gives the kids ages 13 to 15 an opportunity to actually compete on the 8th mile in a licensed, tagged, street-driven vehicle. And, you know, it kind of exposes them to the real race environment, so, you know, they can get out there and they can gain this experience and hopefully take this, you know, on further with them, and hopefully when they get their driver's license, they will see the, you know, the great opportunity they have to actually go race at the racetrack and hopefully try to dissuade some of the street racing that goes on today.
Yes, because street racing really gives our sport a bad rep, and it needs to be stopped. And in the old days, there was no other place to race, so in a way, you had an excuse to do it. But nowadays, there is no excuse for street racing, because there are drag strips, especially if you're in the Carolinas, there are drag strips everywhere, and they're open sometimes three, 4 days a week. And I believe you even have the Thursday night, you have your test and tune night, and it's wide open for the kids to come out for a nominal dollar fee and just come out and really enjoy drag racing.
Well, it is, and that's the neat thing about this program here is, you know, other than the junior dragster program that IHRA has in place, this is the only other program that someone that doesn't have their driver's license can compete in. And, you know, granted, we do have the junior dragster program at Pageland. We run it each time we have our IHRA Summit Super Series, you know, bracket points race. But the junior dragster program can be an expensive route to go. And, you know, the neat thing about the teen championship racing, actually we call it high school challenge, is the fact that you don't have to go out and buy any special equipment, no special vehicle required. In fact, that's, you know, part of the allure is the fact that it's mom and dad's daily transportation. You know, it could be their minivan, station wagon, SUV, what have you. In fact, it was kind of ironic. We had a mother and son come out 2 weeks ago to make their qualifying passes for their IHRA license. And the mom, I will say, was quite apprehensive in the beginning. She didn't know about that. She had a new Durango, and she wasn't real sure about letting her son take it out on the track. And, you know, we reassured her that it was going to be fine, that, you know, nothing was going to happen. And reiterated the fact that, yes, it was still under factory warranty, so that was a blessing within itself. But anyway, we drove down the track and oriented them to the facility, then came back and let the young boy take his qualifying passes. And before the day was out, the mom came to the tower and she said, "Look, this is so much fun. Can I drive? Can I race?" And we let her sign the waiver and get her armband. And then I think her and her son were kind of fight over, see who was going to get to make the next pass. But, you know, it's a great opportunity for these kids to do something with their parents, because with our deal, it's open from 13 to 18 as long as you're still in high school. Now, if you don't have your driver's license, it is a ride-along program, meaning your parent has to ride with you in the passenger seat at all times. The kid does, you know, the transition from staging lanes to the water box, races, comes back to the ET shack and picks up their ET ticket. Mm-hmm. Then they switch places. The parent drives through the pits and so forth and so on. But, you know, it gives them a wonderful opportunity to do something together as a family, and, you know, to interact with their peers and their friends. And we're just, like I said, super excited. We've got, there's a local magnet school here in Monroe that's they're starting up a motorsport technology curriculum for 08-09 school year. And they've asked us to partner and to be on the board of directors for that, and we're helping them get that curriculum set up. And we've had a group of racers step forward and actually donate a car to the school that they can build and campaign in Modified Eliminator or in Footbrake. It's a second-generation Camaro. This car has been raced, and this car was complete less motor. In fact, the lady, Patsy Baker, donated the car to the school. Then we had some racers come on board. Don Wright from Don Wright Racing had a fresh, fully machined 383 short block that he said, "Hey, this is a great cause." He stepped forward, he donated the short block to the school. Then one of our other modified eliminator racers says, hey, Don, if you're going to do that, let me fix a set of heads and supply the camshaft. So he did the valve train components for the school car. Another racer that races with the Carolina Gassers that races at Page once a month said, hey, I've got a set of headers. I'll give you these headers for the project. Michael Beard, Stage and Light Graphics, he donated the graphics for the car. So, I mean, it's just been a tremendous outpouring once the community saw, you know, the benefits in this program.
Well, I'll tell you, this Camaro sounds like this thing ought to run. It's a 383 stroker, good set of cylinder headers. I mean, this baby ought to lay it out.
It should, and like I said, they're going to actually campaign. They're not really sure who's going to drive the car. Our announcer, Doug Mayhew, may actually drive the car for the season, or the actual instructor may drive the car and just let the kids, you know, crew it and, you know, maintain it throughout the week back there at the school.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much potential there. And ironically, one of the other magnet schools down, I think, in the Rock Hill area heard about this program, heard about what we were doing with the school through the TCR, and they're asking questions and trying to get a group of their kids to come out and participate as well. So, you know, there's tremendous opportunity to get these schools on board, and you know, I could even see the day when this would grow into the area to where we could have schools competing against other schools and then having a runoff at the end of the season.
Be like high school football, just about.
Absolutely. In fact, I've kind of pitched that to Scooter Pico the other day, Vice President IHRA, that, you know, it'd really be nice down the road to have a vision to see if maybe we could actually bring the TCR high school challenge type format to our divisional team finals at the end of the season. And he thought it sounded great.
Well, I think what you said about the mom and the son coming out to race, and where mom had to come back and sign a release for him, and the next thing you know, they were arguing as to who was going to go down the track. That is just great to see the parents, you know, get involved with their kids. And also, I think one that everybody needs to know, that, you know, we're looking at 60 mile an hour. We're not exceptionally fast. It's very controllable, and it's very safe. I can just imagine. I know how I was when I was 13. If I'd had a chance to drive a car on a drag strip, oh my gosh, I would have been seventh heaven. And so these kids, really, it's a really neat deal what you're doing for them. And I think it's wonderful.
Like I said, we've really enjoyed it, and we're really excited to get it kicked off. Our first race is March the 29th for the high school challenge, and we'll have one a month. We have eight races scheduled. We figured about once a month was enough for the kids, especially in the summer,
mm-hmm.
you know, with vacation and camps and things like that. We don't want to burn them out. But yet we want to have it, you know, often enough to give them an opportunity. And, you know, like we've told them, if they want to come out on our Friday night program, which we call Flat Out Friday, which features Super Street and Test and Tune and Extreme Motorcycle, you know, the kids can come out and, you know, with their parents and make some test passes as well and, you know, get some seat time. That's what it's all about. Of course, you know, these kids, you know, this day and time, they acclimate so well to electronics.
Oh yeah,
you know, it was amazing that these kids, especially the girls, the females, I mean, they picked up, and you know, after just a couple, three or four passes, a lot of these kids were having, you know, 530 and 540 bolts, which is just phenomenal in a, you know, a no box environment.
And it's not like it's a race car that's set up to launch. You know, we're looking at true 100% street cars that are. Suspension, et cetera, is really not meant to go, you know, perfect lights by any means.
That's right. Absolutely.
Well, Mike, I think it's an awesome program. What else do you have happening up at Pageland?
Oh, we've got a lot going on this year. Of course, we've got our cornerstone of our program is the IHRA Summit Super Series for our weekly bracket program. You know, that's kind of the mainstay. And returning for 2008, we have the Carolina Gassers, which is nostalgic drag cars, 1964 and older, period correct, nostalgic drag cars. They run the first Saturday of each month from April through October. We've got the Pro Tree Racers Association, the PTRA, heads up Super Series. Phenomenal startup group. It's been around 3 or 4 years. Got their start at Mooresville Dragway. Tony Michelle Brown, the series promoters and creators for that series. Phenomenal organization. We've got, in fact, the season opener, April the 12th, and then the season finale, 1st of November. And we've got three of their divisional races, which will feature 6-0, 7-0, and Performance Street. We've got the classic Gear Jammers returning for two events this year. We've got the top eight Door Slammers returning this year. And, you know, just a great season. We're ready to get kicked off. In fact, we kick off March the 21st is our first flat-out Friday event. Then we'll follow that up the next day, March the 22nd, with our first IHRA Summit Super Series points race. And that is a free entry race for top, mod, and for junior dragsters.
Free? Absolutely. Wow. You don't see that very often.
No, you don't. And we've also, that's the season kickoff for our PTRA divisional race as well, which will be featuring 6-0 and 7-0 index. And, you know, that's another format that really has just grown by leaps and bounds is the index format. We do a 470 index, a 530 index, a 6-flat, and a 7-flat. And the neat thing about the 6-0 and 7-0, these cars have no timers, no throttle stops, no downtrack timers, no nitrous controllers. It is a pure driver's class, and it is just phenomenal to watch the level of competition.
Well, I know I'm familiar with the 7-0 class with IHRA when they run the Hot Rod division. Those guys, I want to tell you what, they are just incredible on the Christmas tree, and hitting the 7-0-0-0s, it happens a lot. And, you know, when you hear that, it's one thing to see it and to hear it, but to actually get out there and try to do it one time, you realize these guys, I mean, they're awesome to be able to lay those numbers perfect as they do.
It is, and we've even got a couple of the guys that travel with the PTRA Heads Up Super Series. Kevin Robinson is one that comes to mind, and campaigns of Mustang, and this car truly is a street car. It does have a tag on it. He does drive it occasionally, and, you know, it's not unusual. In fact, Kevin may be the defending 7-0 champ for 2007. Kevin, if you're listening, that's not right. I do apologize, but, you know, these guys are all just phenomenal racers, put on a good show, and they really enjoy what they're doing.
Well, you know, Mike, I had the opportunity to come up there and announce at your track one time last year for when you had the stock super stock combo in there, and that I thought that was a pretty neat deal. I know it's just getting started, and but it definitely, I think it has potential. Do you look to have any of those type races up there again?
Actually, we do. In fact, the two gentlemen that you had on last Wednesday night, I believe,
Michael Beard and Mike Petrie.
Mike Petrie and Michael Beard, they kind of helped me with that Superstock stock combo last year, and spoke with them again this year, and looks like we may have some kickoff sometime in June once some of the you know, divisional stuff kind of gets settled down and there's a little bit of a dry spot through the summer, and we'll look at everybody else's schedule so we don't, you know, schedule on top of anyone else. And you know, the neat thing about the stock superstock combos, basically that's almost like a rolling car show. If you look at these cars, these period correct stockers and super stockers, I mean, they are just immaculate. And it's just, it's so neat to see those things local.
Well, you know, Mike Petrie, 68 Chevy Camaro, and he runs a crate motor. And to give you an example, it's a stocker. But if you remember, he has had to put wheelie bars on the back because he curled the license plate up when he launched one time. I actually stood it up so high, he curled the license plate. He thought he was going over. So I will tell all the people out there, whenever you see these stock super stockers come in up there at Pageland, you need to come watch because it will be wild. This is some wild, wild, wild machines. That's a stocker. So the super stock boys are even wilder yet. So plenty of wheels in the air. It's a lot of fun to watch. And there's a lot of these guys are champions. In fact, both Michael Beard, former world champion, and Mike Petrie, former Division 9 champion. So there's a lot of real hitters that will come into these races. Great guys. You know, one of the neat things, too, at your track is everybody is so friendly. And I will say this, for anybody who wants to go up there and watch some racing up at Pageland, the staff, you couldn't ask for a nicer staff, and you needed to hear this as well, because you got a great staff there. They're friendly, they're courteous, and there's nobody. If you have a problem, they're going to fix it. And that is just so refreshing from what I've seen in a lot of places that I've gone to and so on. The attitude is totally different. So for an evening of just enjoyable drag racing, good food, which I will tell you, you've got some good food in that concession stand. And get you some good food and nice stands to sit in. You're right up close to the racing. I like that. You don't sit back 150 foot from the track. By golly, you're right up there on it. So you're right on top of the action. Pageland's a great little place to go drag racing.
But it is, and I appreciate the compliment there. We do have a wonderful staff, and, you know, we were so fortunate when we bought the track in 05. The entire staff was eager to stay on board, and the majority of them I had known previously anyway. And, you know, they just they know their job, they do their job, and, you know, it's all about customer service. And when a spectator comes through the gate or a racer comes through the gate, it's no different than someone coming into my speed shop or whatever during the week. It's all about customer service. And, you know, we kind of get ribbed a lot about that. A lot of people say, well, we come for the food, but while we're here, we'll stay and watch some drag racing or, you know, whatever. And we kind of get ribbed about our bathrooms. A lot of them say we have the cleanest bathrooms or restrooms around.
That's the biggest compliment you can get, because I have seen, oh, my gosh, some scary sights.
Especially for the women. I mean, you know, you want it to be a family atmosphere, and you want the racers' wives to come out as well. We try to keep the restrooms, you know, stocked and clean and presentable, and you know, it does pay dividends, and people see when you take pride in stuff like that, and you know, we give it 110% and enjoy what we do.
Well, I'll tell you what, I know I had a great time, and I will say this to everybody out there listening: if you do want to have a good time and you're in the Carolinas, Pageland, South Carolina, Pageland Drag Strip, they're getting ready to open up their season. It's just right around the corner. It's a great place to go out and have a nice evening and just enjoy motorsports at its finest. Guy, I want to thank you coming on, Mike. I want to thank you a bunch. And Mike Braddy, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you have a great season, and hopefully I get to see you sometime during the year as well.
Sounds great. You're welcome anytime.
Okay. Thanks a lot for coming on, Mike. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Braddy with the Teen Championship Racing Program. I think that is so cool. A program like this could just change the whole face of drag racing.
Well, Stevie?
Yes, sir.
What else we have tonight? Did you cover all the news items you wanted to cover? I think you did.
The Nitro thing, I touched on it just a little bit, but it's two things. For one, the situation does not look good in Canada. When we talked about gasoline, unleaded fuels being banned in Canada, if that happens, I can't say it for sure, but the rumor has that there's a possibility, and you know, there's always that possibility. IHRA might end up pulling out of Canada.
Well, there's a little more than rumor. I mean,
unleaded fuel, without leaded fuels.
Sure.
Gosh, that's 80% of their cars.
Sure, and. I mean, they're definitely pointed in that direction, and that train's moving that way. There's no question about that.
I know. We've talked about it.
Yeah, we know that's not rumor, so it's definitely headed that way. Unless something changes to slow that train down, it's certainly going to go that way. And you know,
the Canadians are a major part of drag racing in the North American continent. You guys have no idea. A lot of the guys down south don't realize, but drag racing in Canada is huge, and it also affects a huge amount of racing over on the state side, because if you get into your northern states, there are a lot of Canadians. And, of course, vice versa, a lot of Americans cross over to Canada to race as well. And this is all going to change unless something can be done to stop this ban on leaded fuels. And then, of course, the next negative, I hate to bring up two negatives in a row, but the tremendous cost of nitromethane, and that's what provides your shows. It helps bring your spectators in. It makes a living for a lot of racers. $1,250 for a barrel, a 43-gallon barrel. Not a 55 anymore. It's gone to 43.
And what's driving up the price of that? I didn't quite catch that.
A lot of it is the Homeland Security deal.
Yeah.
Just why? I don't know if there are fees or taxes or what. I don't know. I don't have that exact, you know, the answer on that. But I do know that is part of it.
Yeah.
This is not good. Of course, fuel in general is going up, so naturally it's going to affect nitro. But they say a major part of that expense has to do with Homeland Security.
I think you have to have a separate insurance policy for the nitro when you go into these events, whether it's drag boats or, you know, NHRA or IHRA. You have to have a different rider. Stevie, do you know Steve Burns at VP Racing Fuels in San Antonio?
I'm not familiar. Well, I probably met him, but I don't know him personally.
If you ever want somebody to come on like that, let me know. He's a personal friend. I might could get him to do a call in and touch on stuff like this. He's a super guy.
Yeah.
That's something we may look into because this has become a major concern. With Canada under the pressure from the leaded fuels, and then the United States starting to catch pressure on nitro, this is not good for the sport of drag racing. This is, you know, and it's a sport that we all love. And many of us make our living at it, and it's going to affect what we do.
No, when we
road, and also how well it grows or does not grow. So.
It's kind of like the deal with NASCAR whenever they banned the leaded fuel in California, and they had to do the unleaded deal. And now everything they do is unleaded.
I hate to think the major changes it would involve in drag racing, and I. It's one thing to affect NASCAR with 45 cars. It's another thing to affect drag racing, which involves somewhere, I would say, in the 60,000 to 70,000 car range, and that's probably conservative. I know IHRA has roughly 20,000 sportsmen or pro racers who are actual members of IHRA. I know NHRA probably pushes the 40 to 60,000 mark themselves. And, of course, some are crossovers.
Stevie.
But still, we're looking at huge, huge amount of racers. And that's not touching a lot of them that are in the smaller organizations or just race in tracks like Pageland on a test and tune night. And they built these cars and stuff, and all of a sudden somebody takes away the leaded fuel. They take away the tune-up. They take away the camshafts. They take away everything that these cars are set up for. It'd be a major, major hit.
The guys over at Killicycle better get busy.
Yeah, I know. That's somebody we need to have back on again. That's a fascinating story with Killicycle. That is probably where racing will go down the road. How many years before we see that? I don't know. I will say this, though. It's a fascinating motorcycle. Fastest electric bike, one of the fastest bikes you ever want to see.
Well, and not only that, after some of the follow-up stuff we did with those guys, they can do cars right now. They just need the sponsorship dollars or the money funneled into the project to actually put it together and get it down, get it going. But they feel they have the technology to make it there right now.
You know, it's hard to ever visualize racing electric. But after... If you've ever had a chance to watch this Killicycle run, it'll blow your mind. I simply could not believe what I was watching. I mean, that thing was fast, and it was kind of a strange situation to where all you heard was tire squeal. And, I mean, the tire smoke would roll up just like a doggone fuel bike. I mean, it would just ball the smoke off that baby.
All right.
They just, talking about the wind and the tire squeal,
the thing that
and it would lace
turn
them down.
TV. Is long term, looking at just the tip of the iceberg with the fuel and nitro deal for Canada, is the overall big picture with the motorsport industry as a whole. When I go to the SEMA show in Las Vegas and the PRI show in Orlando and so forth, and having been basically in this industry forever, it is such a huge part of the economy, the motorsport industry as a whole. And it could have negative connotations long-term if we're not very careful. It could be very fragile.
As a matter of fact, that's a very good point, Mike. And anybody, maybe next year we need to drag some government officials down to Orlando to the PRI show, because if you go into there, you go into that place and spend just a few hours, you begin to grip how big this industry is and what kind of effects it has on the economy.
Well, you just look at the area that I'm in. I live right outside of Charlotte, and
you know, I look at the economic engine, no pun intended, that primarily NASCAR gets a lot of the spotlight because, you know, it is very big and it employs a lot of people and you know, it brings a lot of revenue into the community. But, you know, it's just like when Bruton threatened to move Lowe's Motor Speedway out of Cabarrus County, there was no way that they were going to let that economic engine move out of that county. They would have done, well, you look, they gave them a blank check for, what, $75-80 million?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I see the tentacles, the way it's entrenched in, you know, in these communities. And that's why now when you do go to PRI, I mean, if you'll look, you've got the municipalities around, you know, Mooresville, Concord, Charlotte, people from Raleigh. I mean, they see the economic vitality that the motorsport industry brings to the table. And, you know, that's something that, man, it cannot be underscored. And that's something that I'm very passionate about. And,
yep.
You know, when I hear of a racetrack, whether it's a drag strip or a circle track or motocross or go-kart or whatever, I hear of it shutting down for, you know, whatever reason, that pains my heart because these places are much easier to close than they are to open.
Absolutely.
And once they're gone, see, we're spoiled here in the South. I mean, there's tracks within driving distance for any kind of motorsport industry or, you know, facility or whatever. You get to other parts of the country, and guys, it's not like that. I mean, you know, you've got to drive 2 or 3 hours each way just to go race somewhere. And I think we've been kind of spoiled with that. But like I said, we've got to be very, very proactive, and we've got to keep our collective fingers on the pulse of this industry and not let it die on the vine or wither on the vine and really stay plugged in and be proactive.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because, you know, something as simple as going from leaded to unleaded fuel can have such a major impact. And the nitro brings the shows in. Nitromethane is the thing that the people come to watch. And if you take that away, it doesn't just affect just drag racing, but it affects the guy down the street with the 7-Eleven. It affects the guy with the steakhouse. It affects the guy that has the hotel. It affects all the employees that work for him. I mean, it's a chain effect that it's just scary.
You see the revitalization. I haven't been to Rockingham in the last 3 or 4 months, but, you know, I was there early last year, talked to a lot of local townspeople while we were there, and that is a perfect example of what happened when you take out the economic engine. I mean, it's just, it can be devastating to a community, big or small.
Yeah.
Yes, it can. Like I said, it can be a make or break situation, and that's something that, as fragile as the economy is, you've got to have a diversified economy, and like I said, we certainly don't want to, like Stevie's saying, we don't want to give up the real cornerstone for these national event programs to really, you know, be the allure. And like you said, Top Fuel and Funny Cars is. And that's a big crowd pleaser right there. That's really a big show.
All right, Stevie, we'll be back next week, Wednesday night, 8:00, Straight Lining with Stevie.
Oh, and it's going to be a blast, guys. This weekend, I'm headed up to Farmington, North Carolina for the IHRA Pro-Am Series, and I'll be talking to all the racers up there, and you're welcome to come up and see me. My golly, it's going to be a great weekend. Some sunshine and fast cars, probably have 350, 375 of them. The bad boys of IHRA are coming to the farm.
All right. See you next week.
Absolutely. Take care, guys.
All right. See you.
Bye-bye.